Blog Talk Radio.
You have just tuned in to an episode of Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir, Sherry Pang, and Maria Wilson Duff. Stay tuned as we enter into the world of the paranormal, a world of ghosts, UFOs, and generally anything unexplained. The show is about to begin.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Maria Wilson Duff, and welcome to Paranormal Horizons. I have a guest this evening, and his name is Libertars. His phone is having problems right now. His call has kind of dropped, so he will call back in. Jason and Sherry are both under the weather right now, and so I am filling in for them. So this should be a very interesting show this evening. I'm going to bring on our guest, and then I'm going to let him kind of tell you a little bit about him. I met him during a KGRA chat room, which KGRA is a huge paranormal radio show, and they have a chat room. Y'all need to check this out. It's really interesting. We have a lot of topics that we discuss during the shows with the guests. But I met this gentleman through chat and several other people. And tonight I decided that I was going to bring him on because he usually has several very interesting topics that we talk about. It's everything from any kind of UFO case you want to discuss, any kind of government conspiracy, and Lord knows there's plenty of those. So I'm going to bring him on right now, and I want everyone to welcome him onto the show. How are you this
evening?
Good evening.
Very well, Maria. And how about yourself?
It's wonderful here. The temperature's been up into the upper 50s today, and I'm sure you're freezing to death.
Yeah, I will survive, though. So you wanted to talk a little bit about privacy this evening?
Yes. I don't think a lot of people, and we've had this discussion before, I don't think people understand, especially the younger generation, say as far as my son, because when 9/11 happened, he was, gosh, I think he was about 8 years old when that happened. So what kind of happened after that, and he's grown up with it, they don't understand pre-9/11 and everything that's happened afterwards that, and how much privacy our government has taken away from us. And I know you're really good on this topic.
Well, we have, even though I'm 39, I predate the internet, and I've always been a privacy advocate. A personal privacy advocate, but I've also had to be a business privacy advocate. And all businesses have information that they consider their own, and the term generally used with it is proprietary. So they have proprietary information that they want to protect from getting out to the public, and especially other corporations. So you have that arm of privacy, and then you have personal privacy. Prior to the internet, people used to recommend that you maintain your private information, and that is three data points, one being your full name, a second one is your date of birth, and the most important one, especially today, is your social security number. Many people will go and voluntarily give out their private information, and they really should not. There's a lot of things that go along with that. So, I mean, I can go all over the place with it, but I've always protected my own personal private information, and I'll tell you about some situations that I won. But many people don't realize these days how much of your private life is legally public information. And the more people know, the better they'll be to protect their privacy. For example, someone's criminal case is criminal record is considered public information. How you vote in a presidential primary is considered public information. Voter lists are sold, different states sell the voter lists, and they're making money. So these days, we have to protect ourselves not only from governments, but from private corporations that have learned very well that our personal information is worth money, and they market our personal information. But let me just go back to forms for a minute and just maybe I can give a couple recommendations to your listeners, but just because something is on a form does not mean you need to provide the information. And usually because I try to be well-read on the subject, I know some of the essential laws of personal privacy. So let me give you some examples of situations that I've won. I went to the Registry of Motor Vehicles to renew my driver's license, and on the form was a spot for my Social Security number. Now, I knew in advance because I read that I did not have to provide it to them. So I filled out the form, and I went up to the front desk, and the woman took the form, and she said, "Sir, I need your Social Security number." And I said, "No, you do not, and I'm not going to give it to you." So the woman said, "We'll have a seat back there, sir." So I went and I sat in the back of the room, and a few minutes later, out comes a gentleman from a private office. He looks at me and he says, "Sir, I need your Social Security number." And I repeated the same thing, and I said, "Sir, you don't need my Social Security number, and I'm not going to give it to you." Now, this guy was the manager of the motor vehicle department. He came out a few minutes later, and he showed me a state law that here they call them RSAs. And in there, it said that you had to give them your Social Security number unless you applied for a written waiver. But having been well read on the subject, I knew I really didn't have to apply for the waiver. So he goes back to his office yet again. He comes out 5 minutes later, and I have to assume he called the state. And he said, "Sir, you're all set. Go pick up your driver's license." So my point in telling you that story is I had to have been the very first individual to refuse to give them my Social Security number, or they would have already have known. Another situation I won, and I always win because I know what I'm talking about because I try to keep up with it. So I went to work for a company, and they wanted to me to fill out all the necessary paperwork and for the health insurance. The insurance company wanted to use my Social Security number as a reference number. And I said to the HR person, I said, "No, I don't want to use my Social Security number." Now, understand there were probably a couple hundred people already working there. And she said to me, "I don't know if I can do that." So what does she do? She calls the insurance company, and they issue me a random number as my reference number. So my point of that is there's 200 people that freely gave away their Social Security number. And I'll tell you another privacy win, and it's a small one. It has to do with my driver's license number. I went to re-register one of my motor vehicles, and the woman asked to see, and I didn't know this woman, so I should qualify. I didn't know her. She asked to see my driver's license. So I don't have an issue with showing them my license, but she wanted me to take it out and give it to her. So I did, and I watched, and she's writing stuff down. And I said, "What are you doing?" She said, "I'm recording your driver's license number." I said, "No, you're not going to record that. That's my private information because it does contain your date of birth. You're familiar with that, Maria, correct?"
Correct.
It's built into your driver's license number. So I said to her, I said, "I shall return." So I went home, and I wanted to use the computer to look up the number, and I called the State Department of Motor Vehicles, and I told them what was going on. And they told me, no, sir, they don't need to record your driver's license number. So I got the person's name and direct phone line. I drive back. I tell them I want back the driver's license number. They wrote down, and here's who you are to call. Well, immediately she gave me back my driver's license number. So the point of those stories is people voluntarily give out their information when they should not do it. And that's one thing you want to kick and scream. And other personal information, you really want to protect that too. Never sign your name on a document unless you first read the entire document and you understand what you're reading and what the requirements are before you put your name on it. And I'll give you one more story, Maria. When my daughter was about 2 years old, I had to take her to an orthopedic surgeon. And we had never been there, so there were three different forms to complete. And each form was a different color, and it really stood out. So one of the forms, I'm reading it, if you signed it, you were waiving your right to litigation against the medical establishment, and you were agreeing to the decision of a medical review board. Now, who's going to benefit of going through a medical review board, you or the medical establishment? So I decided I'm not going to put my name on that. No, I'm not going to agree to a medical review board. So I hand them back, and I'm watching people in the waiting room, and they're all filling it out as fast as they can. It's like a race to get your papers in. Maybe they thought they could get in sooner. And they're not even reading them. So I hand it back that form blank. The woman takes it and puts it in the pile and never said a word. So, I mean, if that doesn't reinforce the fact that you need to protect your information, nothing really will.
That's correct. And like you said, people are just will fill these forms out to get them turned in because they don't want to sit and wait any longer than they have to. So there's no telling. I mean, there's probably forms that people have signed to give away $1 million and they never would know because they don't bother to read anything that they're signing. And they don't understand that if problems come up, they're bound by what they have just signed.
You couldn't be more correct. But people don't realize many things with the protecting of proprietary information go on behind the corporate scenes, too. I'll give you a good example. If a software company wrote a program and sold it exclusively, let's say to a large corporation, we're using software to run their systems. Well, what happens if the software company goes out of business or they go bankrupt? What's going to happen to this corporation that heavily invested in the software? They're going to be in trouble. So what they do, they know that in advance. They know the risk and they do the risk assessment. However, the software company is not going to give the company that bought the rights to it, the proprietary information, in this case, the software code. So what do they do to minimize the risk? Well, then they go to what's called an escrow agent. Most people have never heard what it is. But what an escrow agent does is legal documents get filled out, and it would include under what circumstances the escrow agent would give this company the proprietary information, in this case, the software code. So both companies will fund the escrow agent, and they'll minimize the risk of both parties by holding that proprietary information, in this case, the software code. So in the event the company ever went bankrupt, they'd be able to take that over. There'd be monetary agreements and so on and so forth. But that type of thing goes on behind the scenes, Maria, that most people don't even – they're not aware of it. But
to them, it doesn't affect their everyday lives. So if they don't – if it doesn't get into their way, then they don't think anything about it.
Exactly. But, I mean, it goes to – in your personal life, you have to be the advocate – to protect your personal information. No one else is going to do it, and our government does not do it. So we have to be vigilant to do it. Nowadays, what's becoming very profitable for both governments and private companies is your personal information. And people are voluntarily giving that out. Let's talk for a minute about, for example, Facebook. People think it's free, but it's not free because you are the product. Your personal information is the product. So if you have that, and maybe it's nice to have, everyone has an excuse for having it. I do not have it, for example, but they're marketing your private information. They're keeping track of everywhere you go. And, for example, one way to at least minimize your private information going to various corporations is that Facebook, for example, will literally sell your information. They're selling you access to your information to other companies. Have you seen a website where you can log in through a Facebook account to go into that website, but it's not Facebook, as an example? Have you seen that?
I haven't seen that website.
Okay, well.
No, I have not seen that.
There are many cases, many software applications you have to log into, or websites, I should say. And one of the ways you can log in is using your Facebook account or your Twitter account. If you do that, I mean, it further exposes what Facebook can see, for example. So you have to be very, very vigilant about your personal information and not giving too much out. Websites are spying on you. The government is spying on you. And corporations are spying on you. Just last week, we talked a little bit about the FBI on their blog announced that people need to be vigilant with smart TVs. Because smart TVs are spying on you. There's microphones built into the television, and there are cameras built into the television. So they're listening to what you're saying, what's going on in the room, and they have video access to you. So what they're recommending is people go and attempt to review the user manuals and learn how to disable cameras and microphones in the smart TVs. And that's just one small example, but the worst part is with the government, Maria. But back just for a second, reading documents, you really shouldn't put your name on anything you don't read. And where people don't do it is with software. The contracts are very, very long. They're difficult to understand if you're not used to legalese. And people just keep clicking on yes to install some piece of software. So they're agreeing to the terms of the corporation just by clicking accept. And many of them are personally invasive. I know a chat room application. I actually read their privacy policy, and it's probably one of the most personally invasive I have ever seen. If, for example, you linked your Facebook account and your Twitter account to it, it automatically gives them access to, I guess it's called Facebook Friends. Is that what it's called?
I think so. I believe that's right.
Or people in just Facebook have an address book? I don't even know, Maria.
It's...
Are they called friends or?
Yeah, they're friends. They'll get your contact list or your friends list. I think, and on Twitter, it's I think they're called the same.
Okay, so by using it, connecting your Facebook and Twitter accounts to it automatically gives them, and it's in their privacy policy, it gives them access to your friends. So it's pretty
well, and
incredible.
It actually, whenever you go to install that or you want to go through Facebook to get to several different things, say a game, for instance, if you're playing a game, and it'll ask you if you want to connect it to Facebook. So then that way you can have more friends playing with you on this game, and it specifically will tell you that they will get access to your friends list on there,
wow.
But it will not post to your Facebook
wow.
page. Well, nobody really cares if it has access to their friends list. Just don't post my scores and stuff like that on my Facebook feed. So that, you know, people don't really care if you have a list of your friends, you know, that doesn't bother them.
Unfortunately, whoever your friends are, you're giving them, you're giving corporations access to their information, and they're not even aware of it. So
right.
that makes it that makes it more difficult.
It does. And you were talking about the smart TVs and things like that. You can talk about your smartphones to go along with that, with the cameras and the microphones.
Exactly, because a smartphone, it's a computer is what it is. But I'm stuttering a little bit because I'm trying to remember a story. A long time ago, I knew the gentleman that was in charge of security for at the time. They called it New England Telephone. It's back when everyone had copper lines going to their houses. It was before cell phones, and this gentleman came out and told me that they had the ability to turn the microphone on your telephone, even though the phone was hung up. So
correct.
The technology goes a very, very long time. And we were talking a little bit about, what are they called, Echoes and Alexa, the devices that people have connected in their house. Well, the NSA has come right out and said that that they love it when you connect something to the internet because it just gives them another way into your system, into your computer. It's a little crazy, but people don't know. I'll tell you, for example, my son has one of those devices, and I was telling him that the thing listens to you constantly, 24 hours a day. He said, "Dad, you don't know how it works." And I said, "Son, I do know how it works." So these kids are under the impression that you say Alexa, and this thing all of a sudden wakes up and then responds to your verbal request. Those things are listening all the time. There are already two court cases where recordings have been subpoenaed. To the best of my knowledge, it's only two, and maybe it's more. So they're actually doing murder investigations based on the recording that these corporations, whether it's Amazon or Amazon is Alexa, I don't know. Who's Echo? Maria, do you know?
I do not.
Is it Microsoft? I really don't know. But anyways, those things are listening all the time. People have requested recordings of their own home. They've inadvertently sent recordings back to someone else by mistake, you know, listening to people's private conversations. So I'm not an advocate of having those things in the house either because you're losing all of your privacy with those things listening in on you.
Well, also the doorbells, and I don't know what they're called. Once my friends had one of those installed, and she can see at any time, wherever she is, through her phone, who's coming to her door, and she can hear what's being said, and she can even talk to them if she needs to.
Exactly, and those are called Ring, and those are produced by Amazon. So part of what happens with those things, and remind me to tell you more about the facial recognition aspect of it. People don't understand those things are on 7x24, and they can see in low light conditions, and they do record everything, and I don't know within what distance, but they'll certainly record, I don't know, let's say your house is 100 feet off the road, they'll certainly record things going on in the road. But all of what it sees gets recorded onto a server held by Amazon. So whatever's said or done, whoever walks by that camera, they're recording, their voice, if they speak in front of it, is all retained by Amazon, for example. Now, another thing that happened recently is it finally came out that Amazon was shipping the Ring doorbells with facial recognition software in them. So what? Another thing they're doing, and they're working with various police departments, and Amazon is writing the scripts for police departments to use to get people to use these devices. They're giving them coupons for discounts and things like that, and then the police are requesting access to your cameras. So they're trying to develop this, I'll call it a spy net, a neighborhood spy networks, where they can go on anytime they want and access the video and audio from everyone that gives them the approval to do so. And people don't understand that that's what's going on, especially the facial recognition aspect of it. And facial recognition, by the way, it's in the development stage. I'm 100% against it. Right now, facial recognition is in, 6 months ago, it was in 9 international airports, and they were taking pictures of travelers, non-U.S. residents at that time, and putting them in their facial recognition application. Just recently, I think someone did a test of people in the Senate and Congress, and I can't remember what percentage of them were identified as criminals based on erroneous facial recognition matches. So the whole thing, Marie, is very, very scary.
Yes, because they could connect you to somebody that is not you, and then you have to spend the rest of the time proving that you're not the one that they're supposed to be taking to jail.
Well, yeah, that's true. Or if they gain access to what's going on around your house, it's like I'm sure you read about baby monitors and people be able to hack baby monitors. I can tell people a couple things that are recent cases that have to do with smartphones. Many smartphones now have fingerprint identification in order to, instead of putting a password in to open up your smartphone, you would use your thumbprint, for example. Well,
correct.
If I had a phone that had thumbprint technology, I would not activate it. And the reason is due to recent court cases. So, for example, if you use your thumb to unlock your smartphone, the police can force you to use your thumb to unlock your smartphone, and it's actually quite legal. However, if you use the system where you put in a passcode into your phone, that is protected by the Fifth Amendment right of the Constitution, which is people aren't to be deprived of life, liberty, and the property without due process. So in this case, due process would be a warrant, as an example. I mean, there's lots of things that have to do with due process, but not really on the subject. But tonight, for instance, the requirement of a grand jury. And don't forget the fifth, too, is the infamous self-incrimination part of the Constitution, that people have the right not to self-incriminate. But anyways, people that have the thumb reader, if I can call it that, to access their phone, they don't know what
right.
I just said. So if you want to protect yourself, then you're going to use a conventional pass code. And these days, I wish I could recall, you're much better off using a passphrase than just using, you know, the name of your dog or, you know, your last name,
right,
and your birth date and things like that. I wish I could remember, Maria, there is a software that you use dice to establish a password phrase. So you roll the dice And each number that you get on the dice, you look it up on a chart, and you take the word off that chart. So the theory is you put all these words together. Now, I know what you might be thinking. Well, how am I going to remember that? Well, the passphrases, what you do is you write them on a piece of paper. Granted, you need it on paper for a little while, but after you type that passphrase, and I don't know what the number is, let's say 25 times, you're going to remember it, aren't you?
I would hope so.
So a very long passphrase gives you additional protection because they just can't break that password. The more digits, including numbers and letters, and punctuation, the more you have, the more difficult it would be for anyone to get into your smartphone device. Mine are very long. I use passphrases myself. It's just safer. It's a better practice to use passphrases.
I think a lot of people don't use, so they always try to use the same exact thing for everything. Because I know myself, I have at least 4 passwords that I have to remember to sign into my computer at work every day. And then that's
yeah.
not including every other program that I need to get into, and it becomes a very long list. So a lot of people try to use the exact same password for everything, and that is definitely not a good idea.
No, it isn't. I would say, and people insist on doing, and I actually do it myself for a couple of things that don't involve money. Anything that involves money or your personal information, that's when I would never duplicate a password for different accounts. But you're right. Many people are lazy. And, you know, if you read studies, there are still people that do password 12345. And these companies, you know, they occasionally they'll publish articles. And I don't know where they get the information with the most common passwords. So it's really, it's insane to use the same password, especially if you're going to be spending money. Another thing you can do if you want to protect your private information is your phone number. These days, with all the spam we get, I try not
yes.
to give out my phone number. So a lot of forms on the internet, if you order something, they ask for your phone number. So what I generally do is I put all ones in. and it works, I would say, 9 out of 10 times. You can put all ones in there. Hey, if they want a number, satisfy them and give them a number.
Well, and
anyways,
I think, too, I've noticed on this blog talk on the studio that if somebody calls in using Skype, it's all ones. So apparently that is an acceptable phone number.
Yeah, maybe. And I'll give you another crazy tip for anyone listening. I'm sure you've seen an ad for an anonymous crime line.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Well, there's no such thing as an anonymous crime line.
No.
For example, and this has been the case since there have been 800 numbers. Any 800 number you call, your number is displayed. Even if you have an unregistered phone number, your number is displayed. So people should be aware of that, calling 800 numbers. Even if you dial *67, which is a conventional phone block, it does not block your number. Any 800, and there's lots of them. I don't even know what they all are other than 800. There's 888, and 8, maybe 55, and the list goes on as they need more and more. So if you want to protect your privacy, you know, minimize the 800 numbers you call. But Maria, a lot of people, do you know people that are familiar with protecting themselves a little bit with their internet use? Or do people just go and
a lot of times they just go and do whatever they want to look up. And I know Google is a cuss word to you.
Yes, it is, because they are one of the biggest offenders with your private information. They keep track of every search you do. So what happens, here's an excellent example. I will tell you that in the past, I am my favorite. I have two search engines I use, and one is called startpage.com, and the other one is DuckDuckGo, as in quack duck.
Yeah.
One of the people, originally StartPage was called IX Quick, and one of the principals that helped start it is a Harvard-educated attorney. Well, her and her technical people, somehow, I don't know how they did it technically, found out that when people were doing health searches using Google, that Google was sending their searches to the Center of Disease Control. And Google knows who. Yeah, can you imagine that? They caught Google doing that. Oh, nowadays, some insurance, I don't think it's been totally eliminated, unless I'm wrong and the Affordable Care Act did it, but there are things called pre-existing conditions for your health insurance. So if you have, I don't know, some kind of affliction, then you go get health insurance, and then you have a problem with the affliction, the insurance company won't pay it because they'll say you have a pre-existing condition. So what if someone wants to look up information and they use a search engine on some personal affliction that they have? Well, that's now recorded somewhere. They go to get insurance, and someone, you know, with subpoenas could go and find out that that person was searching for that affliction because they had it, and therefore it was a pre-existing condition. So that's one of the reasons why I don't use Google, and I don't like Google because they monetize your personal information. So just, you know, tips for people, two search engines. Startpage.com and DuckDuckGo are the only two I use. Now, a lot of people, Maria, don't know what a browser is. They don't realize that the browser is the software tool that allows you to get on the Internet. I'm a supporter of using Firefox. Now, there is not a browser made that has not had privacy problems or had breakdowns in the protection of privacy at one time or another. Excuse me. So what I do is I recommend people use Firefox, and then there's little software programs you can put on them. They're called add-ons. So I advocate for three, and there's many, but there's three basic ones that will help you with a malware, for example, and in a second I'll tell you about super cookies. So I advocate using on Firefox, Better Privacy, Ghostery, and another one called AdBlock Plus, and literally that's what it does, it blocks ads. Now, Better Privacy, what it will do automatically, it will delete what's called a flash cookie. Now, people don't know what flash cookies are. That's just the name of a special cookie, and it's made by Adobe. So if you don't have something, people don't know how to locate it, and it's located in the Adobe Player. If you have Microsoft, there's a way you can go in and delete the flash cookies, but if you don't know about them and don't know how to delete them, they remain. So Adobe has a cookie on you that when you delete conventional cookies, always remains on your computer. And Better Privacy will delete that flash cookie when you close the browser. So those are three things on a Firefox that I would recommend people use in addition to the two search engines. Now, are you familiar with the Onion browser, Onion router, Maria?
No, I am not.
Okay. There's a, and I'll be as quick as I can. There's another browser, and it's called the Onion Router, or Tor. And it was established by the U.S. Navy, and it's a 501c3, and that's just an IRS designation of it being a nonprofit. So if you go to torproject.org, and you download the browser, it's based off of a Firefox browser. So what this browser does, and don't forget the Navy started it, and the government uses it today, different government personnel, it bumps you between three servers in the information. So let's say you were looking at your computer monitor. On the right-hand side is you, and on the left-hand side is the information you seek on the Internet. Well, in between the two are three servers, and it bounces from one server to the second server and to the third server to the information, and it goes back through the other three servers and back to you. And in between each hop, it's encrypted. So it's a system to use the Internet anonymously. I don't do anything wrong on the Internet, but whose business are the articles I read or the websites I visit? It's my business. So I protect my privacy as best as I can on the Internet.
Right. And a lot of people don't want to, they don't think about that because Google's there and Chrome is right there and it's faster and better, but they don't realize that a lot of it has to do with the processor in your computer. That helps a lot too.
Well, if you're protecting your private information, it isn't being sold to another party.
Well, right.
When you go to
when your smartphone, you can, and this has happened, and I've heard this over and over and over again, you can have your phone in your room or in your car and be talking to somebody about, say you wanted to build a house, but you didn't know what kind of flooring that you wanted to put in there. The next time you use your phone for something, say if you're reading a news article, all of these little ads for flooring will pop up everywhere you look.
And that's very scary, isn't it?
It is, and it happens a lot. And it happens so much that people don't think about what's just happened. I mean, you can get onto your computer and look for, I don't know, go shopping for boots. Say you get onto Amazon and you buy a pair of boots. Then you get out of that, and then you read an article, a news article, and all on the sides of that web page, there will be ads for different boots at the same store that you've just shopped at.
It's funny how that works, huh? There is one way around it, though, and that is, and people don't want to do it, because, you know, it's too much work for them. But you can delete your session cookies before you go to another website to avoid that. It's crazy what these corporations are doing. Now, we didn't even talk about government spying, and a lot of these corporations are in cahoots with the government. For example, people don't know that Amazon has massive server farms, and they store all sorts of information, essentially renting the space to the government. So they make millions and millions of dollars from the government. Amazon is not just a company that ships products to people. Another thing they do is they have a division that produces facial recognition software, and it's called Recognition, and replace the C with a K. And Amazon's big into that, and that's what part of what's driving the Ring doorbells you brought up earlier. So when the government wants information, I'm sorry, they would just go to Amazon, and Amazon doesn't want to lose that government business. So any opportunity they can legally give away your information, they will capitulate to the government.
Right.
And don't,
and nobody thinks about this stuff because it's not being used against them for anything yet.
Yeah, when people say I have nothing to hide,
right.
There's two things.
That doesn't matter.
Well, there is something
it
that
really
I do.
Doesn't.
Do people have curtains in their house? Yes,
right.
They do.
But they
well,
don't
they,
look
they
at
must,
it that way.
They must have something to hide then, don't they? They wouldn't let
right.
someone take nude pictures of them, would they? So I guess
right.
they do have
exactly.
something to hide. You know what I mean? So I get upset when I hear people say I have nothing to hide.
It's a lot of the stuff that the 9/11 and everything else that came out with that, the Patriot Act, they did it under the premises of this is for national security, blah, 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 blah.
Exactly.
No,
exactly.
It's not. When I go, if I go to the airport and somebody wants to search me to make sure that I don't have, you know, if they walk through a metal detector, okay, fine. But if you're going to take me to the side and you're going to strip search me, just because you have to do that to every 20th person that comes through there, no, I'm not a terrorist. I was born and raised here in America. Don't have any terrorist ties, you have no right to do that to me. And they keep getting away with it.
Yes, they do. Not only that, but they're inspecting people's personal computers now and their smartphones when you come back. And when they do it many times, I'm trying to remember what the term is, that they will copy your entire hard drive on your smartphone and retain that. Oh, it's called imaging. They will image your whole computer or your smartphone. Yeah, we are losing our rights because people don't stand up to it, Marie. And I can't tell you how many stories I've read about one of the alphabet agencies creating their own little terrorists. They'll hire informants who will have some person of little intelligence, and they will corrupt those people, and then they'll set them up, and they'll arrest this person of, you know, that's not very smart, and then they'll say they prevented something, and they do that all the time. We're highly influenced by many things, by television, by movies. It's crazy the stuff that goes on these days.
But
that's
just
why,
like your false flag things that happen, these shootings, and I think it's so funny. I don't think it's funny. Shootings that happen to people, these are actually real things that happen, but they are caused by one of our agencies to draw attention away from or to for a certain agenda that they have. And they've got crisis actors. They've got them.
Well,
and they go to each one of these events, and then, you know, somebody finally goes, okay, so how was this woman the mother of during a school shooting? She was in California, and then she was in the next three shootings, and they're photographing her and putting her images out everywhere.
It's
a crisis actor.
Yeah, I haven't really researched that at all, but what does it for me is after what was called Operation Northwoods, and I can't remember when it was when it happened a long, long time ago. But a lot of people don't recall that the National Security Act, one of the things that it did, other than creating the CIA, is it created what's called the Joint Chief of Staff. And they're high-level military people from all the branches. So back, well, I don't know when this is, but it was called Operation Northwoods. And one of the things that they proposed in writing...
1962. Sorry.
Is that, that was 62. Okay. Great. Thanks. They were going to blow up, have our people blow up a ship in Guantanamo Bay at the naval base in Cuba and blame it on the Cubans so that they could use it as a reason to invade Cuba. And that was signed off by all of those people. So if they'll sign off on that, what won't they sign off on?
Right. Now, did President Kennedy, did he reject that?
I don't know. I don't know. All I know is the Joint Chief of Staff signed on that, a proposal to do that. And people don't understand a lot of the crazy things the government does, Maria. I mean, there was, you know, everyone knows what MK Ultra was. Those, it was a government program. They were looking to develop the... Manchurian, is that how it's pronounced? Manchurian candidate?
Yeah.
Essentially, where someone would be mentally programmed and based on a code word, go off and do whatever they program them to do. And they were doing drug experiments on people, and then they got caught. A lot of people don't know. I don't even like to say this on the phone, but you know Ted Kaczynski, the name Ted Kaczynski, Maria?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, a lot of people don't know he was a professor at Harvard University, and he went through the MK Ultra program. and then he gets caught later and gets arrested, and he's jailed for life now. So some, you know, crazy, crazy stuff out there. You know, one of the things we shouldn't probably fail to do is to tell people about a software application. I don't know if I call it an app for your telephone. Personally, I don't carry a smartphone, but there is a piece of software called Signal, S-I-G-N-A-L, and if you download that onto your phone, your texts, your video calls, and your audio phone calls will be encrypted. However, for it to be functional, Two both parties have to have Signal, and as we sometimes call them, the spooks or various government agencies, they all use Signal too. So I would be remiss if I didn't mention that, Maria, while we were on.
Right. Yeah, it's whatever the government uses, we need to be using as well.
Yeah. There you go. And it was funny. Did we already talk about the? We talked a little bit about the smart TVs, right?
Correct, we did.
Hey, I'll tell you a crazy story. Are you familiar with the company name InQtel?
I have heard of it, but I'm not familiar with it.
Well, the taxpayers own a venture capital firm, and it's called InQtel. It's I-N capital Q-T-E-L, and it's managed by the Central Intelligence Agency. And what they do is invest in promising incubator-type companies, new companies that might have a technology that they want to take advantage of. So a lot of crazy things come out of that. One people don't know about, I'll just tell you about one so I don't bore you to death, is Google Earth came through InQtel. So what happened was back in the 90s, there was a company called Intrinic Graphics, I think is how it's pronounced, and they were a video game company. And they produced this 3D model of the Earth spinning around. However, you could zoom into it. And there were people at Intrinsic that wanted to further enhance the product, but there were other people. It was kind of internal corporate fight, and some of them wanted to keep utilizing the software. So they created a subsidiary called Keyhole. And what Keyhole did is they eventually figured out a way to stream mapping data over the internet to clients. So they would sell CDs to companies and under a subscription basis where they could do mapping, use the internet for mapping. And again, it was called Keyhole. They did a deal with CNN at one time. They didn't sell it to CNN, but I think CNN was their customers, and that was what was used, Maria, to broadcast the invasion of Iraq. Remember when the initial one was all on television? It was almost live. Well, they were using Keyhole. After the CIA saw what the software could do, InQtel invested in Keyhole. Keyhole was having financial problems, and they wanted to do it. They wanted to use their technology for defense mapping. And I think so. They financed Keyhole for a while, and I don't know how long that lasted. Maybe a year or two. And then guess who bought Keyhole? Yep, you guessed it, Google. And now that is Google Earth.
So you know, and that's pretty scary because you can really zoom in on anything on Google Earth.
Yes, you can.
You can see other people, how many vehicles are in the driveway, or it's at the time somebody was in the backyard when that picture was taken, it's there for everybody to see.
Okay, you're talking Street View, aren't you?
You can pretty much get in there with the Street View, yes. You can do that. Google Earth it's scary, the technology.
Yes, it is. I avoid Google products, but Google software, I should say. But let me tell you, this is a... What do they call it when something's a national secret? This is classified. This has been classified for many, many years. But satellites that they release into space can read a gum wrapper on the ground, and they have been able to do that for probably 20 years. They can read a gum wrapper. Have you noticed any time a news agency releases satellite pictures that they're not really going right down to the ground with that stuff? They're doing it, you know, they're up off the surface quite a ways because they don't want to expose the capability of their technology. They also have satellite technology that can see heat generated inside your house. It's really scary if you think about all this stuff.
Yes, they can. If they'll take that, if they're searching for somebody and they think that they're in a house and they want, before they kick in the door, they want to make sure how many people are actually in the house.
Yes, they do. A lot of them will use infrared technology from helicopters. You've seen chases on television where the person appears white at night. So that's their heat signature. So, they can tell who's in your house and see movement from the heat. So it's really kind of crazy. We just don't have any privacy anymore, it seems. A funny thing about phones, you can, I think a microwave would prevent the signal from going to your cell phone, or wrapping it in numerous pieces of aluminum would block the signal, aluminum foil. And they also sell these like little lead bags you can put your cell phone in. If you wanted to hide because your cell phone pings the tower periodically. So periodically, I don't know if it's every 30 seconds or 60 seconds, your cell phone sends a signal to the tower and says, hey, I'm here. The tower recognizes that, records that, and sends it back to the phone. Now, many of these cell phone companies have, and they've got, some of them have got caught selling your location data. So can you imagine being, let's say you're a battered woman and you have a restraining order against someone and you're in hiding somewhere in some apartment that no one knows mm-hmm. where you're at, and that person, through whatever means, can purchase your location data. Ultimately, it comes from the cell phone company. It's very, very scary, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah, if you've got a smartphone, you can't hide anywhere.
Yeah, the only way to prevent being seen is really removing the SIM card. Because
right.
without the SIM card, they can't find you. People think removing the battery from a phone does the same thing, but that's incorrect. Because if you have a desktop or a laptop, there's a battery mounted on your motherboard, and that's how it remembers
mm-hmm.
the date and time when you turn off the computer and turn it back on, even if it's not plugged into a power source. Well, the same way with your phone, to hide, you have to either cover the phone up to block the signal or remove the SIM card. So that's kind of crazy stuff. So,
it really
Maria,
is, isn't it?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, the minute you put your SIM card back in there, if you were trying to hide, they'll find you immediately.
Yeah, because it starts pinging the tower again. So, I mean, it's really, really crazy, trying to maintain any privacy, your whereabouts tracked, you're connected with whomever you call or you text, and that's why people should really use Signal. If someday my phone breaks and I have to get a smartphone, I'm going to install Signal the first thing I do.
Well, and that's also using your debit card, your credit card, because we've quit using, a lot of people have quit carrying cash and quit using them. You're tracked by your purchases as well, time and date, exactly when you were there. And then, they can check the security camera to make sure it was you that used your card, or if it was stolen, they can, like I know Walmart, anytime there's ever been somebody stolen a debit card, they can go to the exact place and time, and they've got cameras everywhere to see who it is that used that card.
And that's true. Did you notice how fast companies installed chip readers in their stores? I mean, they did it almost all at once. Well, you know why they installed the chip readers?
The story they told, it was supposed to be for better security of card.
You are correct. That's the story they want you to believe. But that's not why the stores installed them. The stores installed them because there's a law that Congress implemented a law that if you have a chip card, if a store has a chip card reader, and a chip card mm-hmm. is used, the store is not legally liable for the theft that occurs. However, if the store does not have a chip reader and they have the old swipe machine and there's theft that occurs, they have financial responsibility for the theft. So the stores went out and got the chip readers because they didn't want to be financially responsible for any of the transactions. A lot of people don't know that. And you do know, Maria, that people can read your chip from probably 4 or 5 feet away from you with it in your pocketbook?
Yes, they sure can. They can.
Yeah,
the stores, whenever that law was passed, with some of the stores, it was a financial burden to them because they all had to get new card readers.
Exactly, but they did it because they wanted protection from any legal liability. So I have a chip credit card, and I bought this little sleeve, and it's called a RFID blocking sleeve. So I insert the credit card into this little sleeve, and it blocks the signal, and then I put it into my wallet. So someone walking by that does have one of the chip card, reading devices, they can't read my card remotely. So that's another thing people can do is buy the sleeves. Another thing, the new passports have chips in them too. Did you know that?
No, I do not have a passport. I did not realize that.
Okay, so they're in passports. So let's say now you used to be able to just freely go. For example, if you were driving to Canada, you didn't need a passport until about a year or so ago. Maybe a couple. Driver's licenses were quite acceptable in a friendly sister nation. And then what they did is they require now either a passport or you can buy this, I'm not sure what it's called, but it's almost like another driver's license that you can access any country with it by water or by driving. So you know, by driving, there aren't a whole lot of countries you can access, but they have chip readers in your passport. And if you don't have it in a protective sleeve, customs can see who's coming. And I don't know what distance away. It's probably a ways, and they know it's you, and they have all your private information already. And, that, you know, that's another crazy thing that people aren't aware of.
Well, I know that some of the states are trying to pass to where, and I can't, unlike you, I can't remember the name of it right now, but when they issue you a driver's license, it is, you are able to use that as a passport. The only problem is that some of the states issue illegals driver's license. Now, I know the state of Tennessee would give illegal driver's license. I don't know if they still do that or not. But so how's that going to protect anybody going out of the country into another country if an illegal has a passport and nobody has any of their information whatsoever?
I think
no criminal
what you're
record, they don't understand that.
I think what you were just referring to is what they call a real ID. Essentially,
yes,
it's a driver, right? And that's a driver's license with a chip in it. Now, most states have those already, and mine happens to be one of the exceptions. Except they're capitulating to the government, so you'll have to have that soon. But the premise with that one is you'll have to have what's called the real ID to enter a government building. The only other document is that's acceptable is a passport. So you'll either have to have the real ID or the passport. But either way, I would get the RFID protective sleeves. I figure radio frequency identification, I think, is what RFID stands for. And those things are in a lot of products you buy too, Maria.
They're in the smartphones as well, aren't they?
I don't know if they have RFID because it emits a signal. I would think that just the cellular signal would be enough to identify you, and they wouldn't need like an RFID tag. In your SIM card, by the way, is built-in encryption, but it's not the type of encryption that protects you. What it does is somehow that is what the phone uses for you to get the call. So the number assigned to you, it reads it through this encrypted number, and then the phone signal goes to your phone. And it's funny, the government, there's only a couple of these SIM manufacturers in the world, a couple of large ones. There might be some smaller ones, but there's essentially a couple that do all the SIM cards in the world. And the government hacked into one of them and stole all the encryption keys for the SIM cards. Isn't that nice?
We have a wonderful government.
Yeah, so I don't trust anything. It's funny, I was now wasn't Mike Pompeo, he was the CIA director before he was Secretary of State, correct? I think that's correct. And I listened to a video, and it's only, it's 20 seconds. He was talking to some students a year or two ago and talked about how the Alphabet Agency was taught to lie, steal, and cheat if necessary. So, you know, I have to laugh that he openly admitted that on in front of people. You know what I mean?
Oh, yes, but definitely. Well, and then it went right over their heads. They giggled, and that was all. They didn't understand how much truth was behind that.
That's true. And, you know, Maria, I think some of the technology that the government has to spy on us, you know what I think it does? I think it prevents whistleblowers from helping disclose, make ufology disclosures. Because how can anyone do it without being monitored? You can't make a call because they're listening.
Perfect.
You can't send an email because they're reading. You can't text because they're reading. I mean, literally, they used to open your mail. So how could you privately converse with someone without them knowing? So I think, you know, all the spying inhibits any disclosure in ufology, too. I think it greatly impacts it. And people don't understand that part of it, too, that have interest in ufology.
Right. And between that and all the disinformation that is put out there that follows up, nobody knows what the truth is, and that's what keeps everybody fighting within that field against each other.
That will be
a good story for the next time because we're already out of time for this evening. And I want to thank you so much for coming on at the very last minute because I didn't think we were going to have this show, but I knew that you were very knowledgeable about all of this information. And next time, we'll have to schedule a date for the next time.
All right, we will do that. Well, thank you very much, Maria. You've been an excellent host this evening, and I appreciate you having a discussion with me tonight.
All right, well, thank you, and you have a good night.
Okay, bye now.
Well, that was very interesting. I'd like to thank Libertas again for joining me on the very last minute on this show. Sherry and Jason both have come down with the flu, and they were not able to be on the show this evening. Plus, I think the guest that they had scheduled, he had to cancel at the very last moment. So I hope everyone enjoyed tonight. I know I did. We can learn so much more about how to protect our privacy rights, and we take it so for granted because we live in America and we don't think that these things should actually happen to us. But and of course when we get into the ufology part of it the next time, Libertas and I will start in on that part. So thank you all for joining me tonight, and Jason and Sherry should be back next week. I hope all of you all have a wonderful evening, and thank you again for joining us.